When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, everyone. It's Amanda. Sam is having some technical difficulties this week, so I am doing an interview with Danielle Bayer Jackson. She is actually one of my friends in real life, so it was so fun to have this conversation with her. Danielle is a friendship educator, an author. She is the host of the Friend Forward podcast and the author of the book Fighting for Our Friendships. She is incredible and just such a wealth of knowledge on a lot of like tricky female friendship dynamics that come up. In this conversation, Danielle and I chat about a lot of things. We talk about some of the research that's the most interesting on friendships. We also talk about friendship dynamics that are tricky and how she suggests we work through them. We get into friendship groups and friendship trios and some of the things that are required to make those feel successful, social anxiety and how that factors into friendships. And we also talk about like the erosion of third spaces and how those things influence our friendships. And finally, we get into one of my favorite TikTok videos she did, which was about small talk. And we kind of go into an idea about maybe we need to bring small talk back. So if you hate small talk, which I have hated for a long time and used to wear very proudly as a badge, you will get a lot out of this episode. It's such a rich conversation. We spiral into a bunch of different directions, and I'm excited for you to listen. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. Sam is having technical difficulties. So it is me, and I'm so excited to welcome Danielle Jackson.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for this moment. I can't wait to get into all the things.
I know. I'm so excited because you were on my podcast Recovered-ish a couple years ago, which was sort of like what my little thoughts were before it became a fully formed thing. But you just do such an incredible job of getting into the nuance of friendship. And I guess I'm going to dive right in and say there's so much around friendship. And I think one thing that makes you really unique, in addition to you wrote an incredible book, but you really dive into like actually the research on friendships and what it actually looks like with women specifically. Maybe for people who aren't familiar with your work, what are some of like the most important pieces of research that you think will help people ground them in this conversation?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I like taking the research angle because there's so much content of people sharing their opinion on what you should do, or here's what me and my girls do. So try it and see if it works for your girls. And I've always been curious where I'm like, huh, but is there is there research around this? Like, what are some ongoing trends with certain groups and how has that shifted over time? But there are pieces of research that I continue to keep coming back to that I think might serve as really helpful anchors for the conversation. The first is when we look at the significance of friendship itself. I know a lot of people refer to a popular study from Harvard. They conducted the longest running study on happiness. They looked at all these factors over the span of more than 80 years and found that the number one thing that determines how happy and healthy we are is the quality of our relationships. That's interesting to me. There's also research that finds that, you know, for women, there are a myriad of benefits of having female friends. One is that it can cut your risk of heart disease by 30%, which is, I think I saw the number one killer of women. So that's huge. Or that it decreases our cortisol to go and seek out the company of women friends in the face of being distressed. They find that women who have female dominated social networks are more likely to make more money at work and to advance more quickly professionally. They find that the number one thing that's the preventer of depression is whether or not you have somebody to talk to. And so we just see all the ways that having quality social support, or rather perceiving that you have quality social support, has a direct impact on your physical, emotional, and mental state. And I think that that should create a certain urgency in us to enhance the quality of those relationships.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because especially with what you just said about how it's your perception, because I think people can get very stuck on social media, on TikTok. You know, one thing that I hear a lot as a therapist is, especially when I'm working with, you know, women in their 20s, is they kind of idolize this like girl group, you know, the bridesmaids, the groups at the beach, the sorority squat, you know, all of that stuff. And I think people sometimes feel really like there's something wrong with me if I don't have this sort of group. Yeah, what would you say to someone who's feeling that way? Because I think the key, right, is like the perception.
Yeah. You know, I often stress that word because when you look at the research, like any research on friendship and social support, they use that phrase. They say perceived social support, because I could have a lot of beautiful, helpful, supportive people around me. Yeah. And because of my mental state, because of my expectations, I'm not satisfied. So I don't perceive these relationships as quality. So that really matters. And so for the woman who is feeling either behind or feeling inadequate in some way, because she looks around and sees, oh, my situation's different from what I'm looking at. First, I just want to validate a longing for a friend group. I think speaks to a need to belong to a community, to be designed for family and people. Yeah. So to want to be in this group where there's all these people who bring different gifts and support each other, cool. I love it. That's important.
Yeah.
But I think we have to kind of catch ourselves and see, okay, am I mostly seeing this on social? Am I mostly seeing it on TV shows where they're writing the scenes to have all of the characters be present in every scene because it makes sense for the plot, right?
Yeah.
Am I seeing it in reality TV? Where am I seeing it, right? Because even that, you know, something that's grounded in research that helps us. And they find that I think it's like more than 50% of people, when they gather in pairs. Mm-hmm. Then I think it goes to like 30% is in trios. I think it's like 18% is the next one, so on and so forth. So the average person, when they're with other people, it's just one-to-one. And there are so many benefits and pros and cons to both. But if you feel behind or feel like something's wrong with you because you're not in this big group, I want you to look at the data. I want you to look at where you're getting the information from, and kind of questioning that source. But don't feel ashamed of the desire, but just kind of ground it in reality. And maybe there are some community groups you can join, but even the demand required to maintain a group when you're 30, okay, and we're not talking about a group chat. I'm literally trying to manage five people's schedules.
Yeah.
You know, they have to not be, have like many competing obligations. Cause if I've got kids in a demanding job, well, there goes my availability.
Yeah.
So the practicality of constantly hanging out with four or five other people. And so maybe that's available to you at some season in your life, but you're certainly not behind if you don't have it now.
Yeah. I love that. I know last time we chatted, we also kind of talked about the pros and cons of friend groups. You mentioned just one about just like you know, logistical stuff. Mm-hmm. But I also think it's really interesting because there are benefits of you also get to see more than one person at the same time. Mm-hmm. You get a different dynamic when you're in a group. Things can be more fun and there's less, you know, I think sometimes, especially if you're making new friends, like going on a bunch of in a row solo friendship dates can feel like dating. It can feel draining. It can feel like, all right, you know, we're doing this back and forth of I'm going to see you, you're going to see me, I'm going to text, you know, this time, you're going to text that time, where it's a little more spontaneous maybe when you can do a group. But it also sounds like there, you know, I remind myself of this a lot because growing up, I used to kind of idolize having a friend group. But you also, I think, have to be realistic with yourself of like that also means managing different personalities. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It means that not everyone will be as close to each other. Mm-hmm. And those things are going to inherently create sometimes more conflict than just individual friendships.
Absolutely. You know, recently I was working with a client and we were kind of, her initial goal was, hey, I want to put myself out there more. And we were coming up with a strategy. She was already social, but was in a new city and we were looking for a strategy. And we weren't talking for too long before she started to really emphasize group dynamics. I just want a group. And so, you know, I paused because I believe in staying in my lane as a coach. And I said, okay, well, I said, why the group thing? Talk to me. Yeah. So she brought up some stuff and I was like, okay, I think that could be great to talk through with a therapist. Now, if that's important to you, I can tell you what things you need to prioritize if you want to form a group. And then you look at if that's something you practically want to pursue. So we looked at things like availability, right?
Yep.
We looked at proximity. People don't want to talk about it. It's very unsexy, but let's get for real. You want to be hanging out every other weekend with the squad? Do they all live within a 10-mile radius? How is this happening, right? Because that's another barrier to me coming to hang out with the squad is I got to drive 45 minutes. Yeah. Okay. Our personalities mesh. I like everybody here. Otherwise, I would not be showing up if I don't enjoy their company. If I did not have a pleasurable experience, I am not going to elect to do that again. So they all enjoy each other and we have shared interests because what's the thing we're talking about that's keeping us compelled with one another? What's exciting? What are our shared life experiences? And so if we want to get technical, these are the elements that tend to help friend groups to form and to be maintained over time. Okay. But if you think, oh gosh, when am I going to form that? You know, one suggestion I make for people who want that is to go to the bigger interest groups. We hear it all the time. Join a run club, this and that. But to do that because people tend to splinter off into subgroups. So you find your people there. I know we already live close because we're at this run club or whatever it is. I know we have shared interests. And now I can kind of slowly pull you away from the busy town square and we can see if something can develop. And the last thing I'll say is to really think about your relational goals. Because I'll hear women say like, I don't know. I want to go deeper, you know, I want more quality, but I also would love a squad of four or five. I am not saying it's not possible. People do it all the time, but you show up differently in a group. We've got to take turns. You have the girl who's normally chatty until she gets into a group. She kind of adopts the role of kind of like the passive one because the girl who's a little more alpha is like dominating the conversation. And I don't feel close with two of the girls, but with one of the girls I do. So I'm not sharing all the time here. I'll wait until we're alone. You know, so really look at what are my relational goals and what I meet them by working to maintain a group. And it's just something to think about.
I love that because I think we blame ourselves a lot for not having what we want and putting those specific things on the map of do you live close to someone? Do you, you know, do you all have the shared interests and goals? I think it kind of, I don't know, just breaks up the pressure of it's not your fault necessarily. There are also real restrictions.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just something to look at again, to take the pressure off, to kind of differentiate between, man, this would be nice. And what am I romanticizing? What can I logistically design for myself? And so hopefully those things help people to look at all of the information.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like last time you also had talked about friend groups also require having more secure attachment. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. So, you know, after shows like The White Lotus, there's like the concept of friendship trios was like very hot in the media.
Yes.
And people were talking about it like, oh, this is why it never works and this and that. And it totally can work. I'm so happy to be a part of a friendship trio that formed kind of like a year ago. I don't know what's going on. It happened and it's amazing.
Yeah.
But there are a couple things that I think make it work. And not just for me, but for those who are in one. One is you do have to be relatively securely attached, because there are going to be times that the two of them do things without you. They just will. Does your mind immediately go to, oh my gosh, am I being left behind? What does this mean? Do they like me less? Or is it going to like, oh, I guess they like each other better than me. Well, you know what? I don't even need this. Okay. Mm-hmm. How am I interpreting the two of them spending time without me? Okay. The second thing is sometimes you have to prioritize the group above the individual, which I know might sound contradictory to point number one, but in terms of like when we're sharing information about our lives or making certain decisions, is everybody involved? Because it's very easy to start to maybe gravitate toward one or the other. Are we saying, hold on, pause for a second. We need to tell so-and-so too, or we need to loop her in, because everybody needs to be on the same page. I think a commitment to not talking about one another behind each other's backs. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't have to be a whole formal sit down. It could just be the first time somebody does bring it up. Like, hey, do you feel like she was kind of being, you know, a witch today at the pool? I could say, you know, I don't know. Let's talk to her about it later today. Yeah. Be like, girl, what's going on? I'm showing you with what I refuse to engage in that. We're not going to do that.
Yeah,
I'm not going to do it. And it sets the tone. And so I think there's some things that have to be in place that help people to feel secure in knowing that these are both my girls. We all prioritize each other. We're safe here. And we believe in having an individual relationship with one another, but we also prioritize the group. And so some of those things, maybe you need to say them explicitly. But I think if you can subscribe to those ideas, I think it's easier to manage a healthy trio over time.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, I think it is so interesting. Just I've, you know, as a therapist, and you have this too, you get to hear different sides of sort of different stories. And I think based on my own experience, you know, and just how I was raised, it was very like everyone must be included at all times. But I've also heard from people about their experience and how it is sometimes challenging when you know, non-maliciously, people will sometimes, like you said, run into each other, plan something together, have a certain interest that you don't have with them. And how do we manage? Because I think especially with social media, that has gotten so much harder and worse with everyone posting, and even younger generations with Find My Friends and Snapchat and the live watching people and things like that. Yeah. How do you support people with that?
There's so much. You know, here's the thing that I think has been helpful to me is whenever we talk about dating and romantic relationships, there is so much space and permission to talk about all the things. Babe, what's your love language? What's your style? What makes you feel jealous? What makes you mad? But with friendship, there's kind of this understanding that we just kind of ought to know. And if you are my real friend, I shouldn't have to say it. And with friendship, we shouldn't have to talk about it. Like we should, it should just flow. And that's not true. And I've once heard it said that friendship is maybe the most ambiguous relationship you'll ever have. So if anything, it's even more urgent that I spell out for you what I'm looking for, what I'm kind of nervous about. What did you mean by what you said yesterday? Because I know that even being a friend it might mean something different to you. I mean, when we have conversations around what we even owe each other as a friend, I don't know what you're bringing here and you assume I owe you, right? And so, you know, the example of like leaving each other out and doing things without each other. You know, I talked to one woman, she's a pastor. She's very personable, knows a lot of people, and she's very well liked by other women. So she's that person who there's probably 20 girls who think she's their best friend. Okay. And she told me she had to stop posting herself doing anything social online.
Yeah.
Because there would always be a woman in the DMs like, oh my gosh, you guys were in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have come. And it just got to the point where she's like, you know, I can't do this. Now, I don't know, you know, I don't know that I would take that approach, but mm-hmm. especially for her and her role, she didn't want to make it look like, yeah. and I understand that. But sometimes there's permission to have the conversation and it's hard, but people can get with it or they can't. Yeah. In this friendship tree I was mentioning earlier, and I'm sure they won't mind me talking about it because we laugh about it now. But yeah. at one point I was like telling them about a dinner party I was going to have at my house, these two girls. Yeah. And I was like, and you guys are not invited. and they were like, they couldn't tell. I said, I'm totally serious.
Yeah.
And they could not wrap their minds around, how are you having a dinner party and not inviting your two closest friends?
Yeah.
And I had to explain, I was like, listen, this is a different vibe. And I yeah. love having dinner parties. One might be for the wives of my husband's friends. And like, yep. there's a certain flow of conversation and there's certain things we want to talk about. And so the vibe's different. Or I'm inviting women who I'm kind of acquaintances with and I'm trying to get to know them. And I'm also mm-hmm. kind of playing a little matchmaker and letting them kind of get to know each yeah. other. I don't want my two besties there and we're off in the kitchen talking where we kind of already have background stuff we're referring to. Like, yep. I'll catch you guys this weekend. Or I'll yeah. catch you the next one. And I had to explain up front, you're going to see pictures. And this is how I approach friendship. I have different pockets. Sometimes we blend. It's mm-hmm. the more the merrier. And sometimes it's just for, we're doing mom life. And we yeah. want to talk about diaper cream. And you don't care. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we kind of had to have that conversation. We had to have conversations around the three of us. Like, hey, so what's the vibe? Like, do you guys believe yeah. in hanging out one-on-one? We talked about it. And one brought up, like, I feel like that's cool unless, you know, you're doing something that all three of us like. Like, we all like reading books and drinking wine. Yeah. So, like, if the two of you went to go to a bookstore and drink wine, I think I would feel like what's going yeah. on. But if you two go watch that big star have a concert and, you know, I'm not really into her, go yeah. do your thing. So yeah. we had to set norms of, like, okay. Okay, yeah. that would, okay. And so I know it feels awkward, but I also feel like I have a new level of a freedom
yeah.
because I never have to guess. I can just do what I do. They do what they do. And we know what it is because we had the conversation. So there's very little room for offense and misunderstanding.
I love that. I love that. I am very similar in that I feel like I have different sides of myself around different people sometimes, but I was very much raised that you must invite everyone and everything should be the more the merrier. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad you said that because that made me feel better because I've also had situations where I've maybe wanted to do something or I've felt hesitant to like mix friend groups or things like that. And I've really made myself wrong for it. I've made myself feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just like weird.
You're not weird. You know what really changed it for me? Because I used to believe in the more the merrier. I'm talking yeah. maybe like up until 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I read the book, The Art of Gathering.
That
changed my life. And she yeah. made the point of think about.
You live the art of gathering, I feel like, Danielle. Like the way you do, you host parties. You like are so intentional with creating experiences. Like I read that book and I was like, I want to be that. And I have done none of it at all.
I'm trying, but there are hurt feelings along the way. There are yeah. hurt, which is hard. And when yeah. she said, like, really get clear on why are we gathering? Yeah. Really? Then you get clear on, okay, it's to have conversation for moms about this or to mm-hmm. meet new people or to mm-hmm. what is the point? Because that determines the guest list.
Yeah.
And if we think it's unkind to not invite somebody, I would argue it's not kind to invite somebody that, you know, others would not be able to relax and enjoy themselves mm-hmm. with. And I hate to be the person, but like, if there's a girl there who like is always talking about drama or talking about people or dominates the mm-hmm. conversation or tells people's business and we know yeah. that she's a yapper, then the five other girls are not going to share or feel safe because I wanted to be nice and let everybody come. Even though I know if the goal is to share vulnerably at this yeah. like little sleepover or girls trip, that they're not going to share openly if these two girls come. And so those are like some of the hard conversations you have to have.
I love that. Yeah, I think we do. I really believe also with what you were talking about with just how ambiguous friendship mm-hmm. is. I found it much easier to date than to like make new friends because it is clear, you know, especially if you're looking for a committed relationship, you know the deal. You see that, you know, you see other people, you continue to date them, you eventually get to the point where hopefully you guys are, you know, in a committed relationship. And then that's how the parameters are set. There are so many different types of friendships. Different people are closer. You don't really know what people's expectations are. It's hard to know, have we stopped seeing each other because life has gotten busy? Have we stopped seeing each other because she doesn't like me anymore? You know, like all of the vagueness, I think, makes it really difficult sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. What are you hearing from people or sharing with clients when they come to you about like feeling left out or not being invited? And I expected that they'd invite me. What comes up for you? What do you find yourself saying all the time to them?
I try to remind them of that their perspective is just one perspective. And I think just because, right, we have an emotion about something doesn't mean it's necessarily reflective of someone's intent, right? Obviously, impact matters, but I also think it's not fair to not consider that, you know, if someone didn't invite you, and especially you gave a great example, Danielle, of like the intent was they knew you weren't going to have a good time or other people wouldn't. I think that is positive intent. Or I also think that I just feel like we've, with social media, we're like policing each other more. And we have just a lot more technology. Even I was talking to Sam the other day and thinking about surveillance culture and just how different people act when they are under surveillance. And in a way, we kind of are, you know, I was thinking about it in terms of parenting, honestly, and how kids act very differently when they know that they're being surveilled by, you know, a tracker, an AirTag, their, you know, the camera in their room, whatever. And what is the place where you sort of let them be and give them some more freedom, but also as a parent, you know, you want to see what's going on. But yeah, I think it's just like friendship and relationships are changing because we were not all meant to know what everyone was doing
at all times. Yes.
Like we just weren't.
I'm writing that down because I got to unpack that later. That's so – because you got me really thinking about surveillance. Like if I know I'm being watched, what decisions do I make in my friendship? Yeah. How do I engage? But if I weren't being watched, how do I – that is so interesting.
Okay. Well, I even think about it, and I wonder if you do too, like as someone who has more of a public-facing persona, I notice myself – I police myself a lot because I'm very like vigilant about if I say something the wrong way, will someone misinterpret it? Or if I said I was doing something, does it look like I'm not doing that because I'm showing up doing this? And it is really like fascinating the extra mental energy it takes to kind of surveil yourself and surveil others. And we have this ability, you know, if we're talking about it from like an anxiety perspective, and I think this is very relevant. A lot of people, right, if they have anxious attachment or just anxiety around friendships, which I think a lot of us do, if like one way that we make ourselves feel better is by checking. So, right, a lot of times that looks like, are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? Or it might be actually just checking on where your friend is, what they're doing, texting them by being like, hey, what's up? You know, checking in that way to make sure that they respond to you. We're still good. We're still friends. And I think that obviously some of that is like normal and makes sense, but I think that the more anxious we get, the more likely we are to exhibit those behaviors. And then it can cause more anxiety because we become reliant on our friend to say that we're good, or we become reliant on our friend to answer us quickly or do certain things rather than trusting like the friendship and feeling more secure in it.
Okay, that's so good.
You should look into like relationship OCD. That is more connected to like romantic relationships and stuff. But I do think like the anxiety shows that, like I've had a lot of clients who we ended up realizing they had OCD, and one of their, you know, compulsions was essentially to check and make sure friends weren't mad at them. And I get it on some level, as actually I relate to that person because that was how I was, like, especially in my addiction and things like that. I was very insecure. But now as I'm in a more stable place, I also can imagine I would be very annoyed at someone if they were Because again, it feels like you're being policed. Like you're watching, they're watching your tone. They're trying to read between the lines of everything. Like it doesn't feel good to be around someone who's who is really anxious about the relationship.
That is so interesting. That is so interesting. And it does make me think about kind of what we said earlier when we started this conversation around the perception of social support. Like if you have gotten verbal reassurance, girl, we're good. You know, or for me, I tried to be very direct. So friends should not be asking me like, are we okay? Because like, I would tell you, I'd be like, hey,
yeah,
I feel really weird about what you said last night, you know, but I understand that, you know, I'm learning that that goes beyond me. It doesn't matter my reassurances. This is still something you feel you need to do. And so it's just interesting that going back to that perception of social support, you know, recently I read this article in The Atlantic and I forget what it was called. But the author was talking about how there are all these friendship apps and friendship programs and stuff that are emerging because like friendship is hot right now. And so you've got all these apps that are like, oh, we connect you with people in your area and you can meet for dinner, blah, blah, blah. But for like 90% of them, their mantra, they'll say their objective is to help with loneliness. People need friends to help with loneliness. We need friends because loneliness means you don't have friends. And she was making the case that like the problem is not always a lack of friends. Or for your loneliness, the loneliness could be because of what you just described. You're so in your head and anxious, you will never feel, even when you have people.
Well, like, I mean, it's horrible. It's not a great connection when you
when you're
in your head checking about and, you know, surveilling everything.
100%. And it was just interesting. The author is making the case for like all these friendship things emerging and saying that, you know, our main mission is to help with loneliness. She's saying your loneliness can be because of mental health issues. You don't feel connected. Mm-hmm. Your anxious attachment, so you never feel totally secure. Yeah. It can be because of you, because you don't know how to go deep. So you have no shortage of connections, but you have an issue with like getting vulnerable. And so like really looking at what's the reason for me not ever really being able to feel connected to another person. It might not be because I lack people. It's because I've got other things that are making me feel perpetually lonely. And the answer is not to go and make new friends. That's not the answer for all of our ailments. But it's just interesting hearing you talk about that because, again, it speaks to that your perception of being adequately supported by your social network. Sometimes it's not a matter of the number of bodies. It's just our own stuff.
Yeah. What do you think about like friendship apps and what are kind of like the pros and the cons of them?
Yeah. You know, so full disclosure, I was the ambassador, the spokesperson for one of the most popular apps for women meeting other people. And it worked. We got the messages all the time of women who were like, oh my God, I met my besties there. We were in each other's weddings. So I got to see firsthand a lot of women who were sharing their gratitude around meeting their people. And I think for people who are looking to meet new people, like we just talked about, if that's the goal, you will definitely, definitely meet that goal by being on friendship apps. Now, if your issue is forming deeper quality relationships, if your issue is some other things that might not be the answer, I also think how you show up matters. So if people are messaging you and you don't respond, and you're just like, oh, whatever. Yeah. Or, you know, you're kind of like inconsistent with it. Or you're lying to yourself. You're telling yourself, yeah, I'm here for friends. But you're really here to like build an aesthetic, like find other girls who like look cute and do all the things because it would look really cute to be with these girls and vibe in your pictures and content, which I'm digressing. I am waiting for research on that because that's a whole thing. And I haven't seen anything on it about like people who are looking for other people to fit the aesthetic because it will look good to like be friends and do stuff with them. But like they're not actually like your friends anyway. But I mean, people aren't really going to ever admit to that. So that's kind of weird. And so again, I think it goes back to like, what's your goal? Is it to meet new people? We've talked about, you know, I've helped people kind of put their friendship app profile together. And it's just interesting to see how we portray ourselves to the world. And does that align with what you claim you're looking for? Like if you're looking for more meaningful friendships, but you're leading with things that signal something that's the opposite, kind of like with dating apps or women who are too scared to put what they really enjoy. I see that a lot. Like when they go to list their hobbies and interests, they're staying really broad because, I mean, if I put what I really like, other girls either won't get it or like it, or I'm going to look nerdy, or I'm going to look. Mm-hmm. So I'll just say I like music, eating, and travel. And girl, who does it? Okay. Yeah. You know, but not understanding if I'm trying to expedite the process of finding my people, that means I'm being specific right up front so that the people who can self-identify, you are not for me, terrific. You know? Yeah. And so it's interesting to see what comes up as we build out these profiles and try to connect with others. But I think the friendship apps are great, but I think just remember their goal is to essentially make money, keep people on the app. You got to think about everybody's, what everybody's invested in. Keep those things in mind. But it could totally be helpful if you have like some kind of very unconventional schedule. If you're a nurse or something, your hours are crazy. It can be a really helpful tool, but it should not replace you meeting people in person. I think it could be a really cool supplement to your friend-making toolkit.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like people run into probably the same problems as friendship apps as with dating apps. Of it is hard to get off, like it's hard to actually move the conversation into doing something in real life. And I would imagine that lots of people join them with bigger, you know, expectations or bigger goals of what they will actually do than what is realistic for themselves. And I don't know if you've seen this in your work, like a soulmate friendship sort of thing that happens where we become overly picky about our friends and then we have like ridiculously high expectations for them, or we like cut, like I, you know, Sam and I have talked a bit about like cutting off culture in terms of like friendships and things like that. Yeah. What have you been seeing on, you know, in your work?
Yeah, that's interesting because when I think about the friendship app thing, again, it could be helpful in like, hey, I'm trying to find people who are also into like working out or they share my faith or other moms who kind of get the lifestyle so I don't have to explain. Totally. But to your point, I think too, one thing that can be tricky is I'm looking at these sentences that describe you and deciding yes or no, as opposed to like if I met you in real life, I might not know these things. And we're building a relationship in the context of relationships. So I hear those other things in the context of knowing you. So we've already like laughed together, had some small talk, we're vibing and chilling. And then I discover something that maybe I normally would not like. But now it kind of pales in comparison to like we've been hanging out for like 2 weeks. So like, oh, I'm more open-minded to that thing because it's you, you know? And so some of that stuff, like, are we, is it stopping some friendships before they even start? Because I'm looking at the list and I'm looking for my bestie. And the idea of my bestie has no space for a girl who watches shows like that. You know, like, you know, come on, you know, or a girl who, oh, you didn't go to college. Like, no, I need girls who, you know, so that's interesting too, is how maybe some relationships never get off the ground because they didn't pass the checklist. And then let's say you start with all the checklist things and we're vibing, but then I uncover something and I'm cutting you off to your point because I just, I mean, can't quote unquote, like hold space for that. I don't know what to do with that. And I guess that comes down to like the whole, you know, theme of this show about nuance. Like I had this idea of what a friendship ought to be. You did this thing I don't like. It's like almost like a formula in a machine. And if you do something I don't like, my bestie would never do that. And then we other them, I see a lot, especially with women where you do a thing and then I conflate that thing with your character. And then I have othered you so much that I can't reconcile with you because I can't be friends with someone like that. And, you know, even with parenting, I have been guilty too of having friends who are parents and then discovering a parenting choice they make. And it's so wild to me. I'm like, oh, girl, what? Like this thing that should be like obviously unsafe or not okay, you're cool with. And then starting to think, how is she? I didn't know she was the kind of person who, like, you almost have to catch yourself of like, you know what? She loves her baby. I love my baby. She thinks this is the safest choice for her baby. Okay. You know, like almost having to coach myself out of, no, cut you off. Now, obviously, because of course my brain anticipates people in the comments So hold on. Let me talk to those
people. Exactly. I always have a third person hovering over me monitoring this conversation. Right.
But of course, that doesn't mean that if she's posing direct danger to you and your family, that you shouldn't leave that relationship, you know? Yeah. So it's hard thinking about, what is my margin for error and my margin for just differences? And to some degree, do I expect so much symmetry? Like, I want you to be a clone of me, and I want your life decisions to mirror mine. And if you don't, I don't know what to do with it, right? Yeah. Or if you do something that really greatly grieves or offends me, like, at what point is it on me to be like, girl, I feel some kind of way about that. And every time you do that, I just don't enjoy it. I don't have the skill, or worse, I convince myself that I shouldn't have to. Like, that should be so obvious that you don't say or do that. And so, you know, the cutoff thing, I don't know. My prayer and my personal goal is to help us learn how to have more relational resilience.
I love that. I love that. Because, I mean, it's like we're losing the ability to tolerate the friction that will never be smoothed out when it comes to other human beings.
Yeah.
And it's like, if we lose that, is that part of what's going on with why we're struggling in relationships?
That's so good. And I love that word, friction.
Someone else came up with that on TikTok. I don't know.
tell us your at, girl. Drop your at to me. That's so good. And you know, now I don't mean to be reductive, so you tell me, okay?
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, some of the social anxiety, the anxiety about relationships, sometimes I wonder how much of that would decrease if we were just like out in the world and you just had to just suck it up. And this is not me advising that. This is not me like minimizing it. But is there time to think about if your friend hates you and if you look stupid when you said that thing, and did you sound silly when you said that? And were people talking about when you left? If you were with people 8 hours a day and we're all talking and helping each other out and community living, and you've got like, there's no time for me to think about how I'm perceived and if I'm overstepping, and if we're sharing space and just like living together, like I have to live life with you, make decisions with you, depend on you, you depend on me. And so, you're right. I don't know if the distance between us accounts for some of the anxiety and the strong boundaries of like, don't do this and the overcorrecting. Mm-hmm. I just wonder how much of it would go down if we had to just be up in each other's face for 8 hours a day again.
Hi, all. I'm just popping in to share. If you didn't notice, Sam and I have cut back a little bit on the amount of episodes we're doing. So for the month of August, we're going to do one episode a week. And then going forward, we're going to look at doing about seven episodes a month. And if you loved the FAQ episodes, we are going to be doing more bonus episodes on Substack. Essentially, the TLDR is that we are struggling to get advertisers for the podcast. Everyone has a podcast now. It is so competitive. So because of that, our plan is we're going to invest a bit more in Substack. So we're going to have more bonus episodes over there. We're thinking about doing a book club, maybe a monthly chat, a monthly hangout. We would love to hear your feedback on this. You can reach out to us here on Instagram, email us at podcast@therapyforwomencenter.com. But even if you just want to sign up as a free subscriber, that would mean so much to us. You can check out our Substack at nuanceneeded.substack.com. I mean, I think, I'm not advising or minimizing social anxiety either, but I mean, that is like the principle of anxiety is like avoidance that makes anxiety worse. Mm. And that is the problem, is that we have lots of opportunities to avoid. And that's not to say that there aren't incredible advantages to a lot of people. You know, people live in rural areas who were screwed where my parents lived in a suburb. So it was great for them, you know, and even like disabled people, they have access to, you know, chatting with people online, getting help, all of those things. You can hire someone to help you move now where you were like crap out of luck sometimes. But I also agree. I think especially the example you gave of You know, and I wonder if that's how the apps tie into it too, of like, well, I'll just meet other friends, sort of. There are all these people. Because I know that shows up in romantic relationships. Of they've done studies of people are more likely to, you know, they put more pressure on their spouse sometimes and they have higher expectations when they're dating of, right, if this relationship isn't working out, well, there were a lot of other people on the app. I think that's peaking because there's a general understanding in the world now that like online dating is horrible and it's really hard to find someone. But like 10 years ago, I think that was a lot more like, the world is my oyster. Look at all these people that exist in the world.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And again, I know like there's some things that are just not everything's cured with like, just put us all in a pot and put us in a room. And I know that that's like such a struggle for people, anxiety and all those things. I guess I'm just adding to that conversation and I'm curious about, you know, if I couldn't cut people off, like, you know, I have to see you at church every Sunday and this is the church I go to, or if I have to see you in school, because it's the school I go to, does it help at all to guide us through the conflict resolution process? Because I've got to sit next to you 3 days a week at school. So I kind of, we got to work it out because I'm going to see you, as opposed to I can cut you off and elect to never go down your neighborhood again and block you on socials. And, and I mean, the same kind of concept with like canceling plans, right? Yeah. We always say that like before you had, you know, the answering machine and you can't tell me, so you have to come. I'm going to be out there and you're not going to be there, you know? And so again, the technology creates that space. And so so I just, I don't know. And it's just interesting to see how you have to kind of look at all of these things as a constellation, not in isolation. Yeah. So our distance from one another, this hyper independence on tech, you know, just all these things working together, the increasing burnout because of the demand of always being on at work, how they all work together to create an environment where we're siloed, where we're collectively anxious, where we are lonely, all these things because of this big constellation of things. And so, I don't know, I guess the key there is to just kind of like determine like what's totally unsafe and what's just like a little stretch, and to constantly be like stretching a little bit, because that's like where the growth is and where healthy relationships are. It's just like, I think identifying that little gap. Okay, this is a stretch, but it's not dangerous. I normally don't follow up with a girl after we have a tense thing, but I'm going to try it. I'm just going to be like, hey, I know it was awkward yesterday. I wasn't upset with you. I just was feeling a little offended. You know, like I've never done that, but I'm going to try it and see what happens. Just that stretch. And I think we would all be maybe better for it.
Absolutely. Let me ask you this. You did a TikTok, I don't know, a month ago where you talked about, you advocated for small talk. And I swear it has like rewired something in my brain. Will you share it with the people?
I'm going to try to remember because I was just yapping in the backyard. But I pretty much – I think I had just seen yet another video of a person lamenting the perils of small talk and how much they hate it.
It's become people's personalities. It used to be kind of a unique thing, I feel like. Or at least maybe it's because I didn't like small talk and I wore that as like – a badge of how unique and deep I was.
Yes. And maybe that's what it is. That's a good, I love that you said that. I think that's what it is when I'm making it known repeatedly how much I hate small talk, what am I trying to signal about myself as a person? Because we're all doing it. When you post something on social, when you're signaling something about who you are. Am I trying to show you because I'm different, because I have depth? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I just was trying to make the case for how small talk is great and all the functions that it serves. So, you know, I've heard some people say it's social lubricant, right? Which I know this kind of conjures up a certain image, but like, you know, like before we jump into the things, let me ease into it. And I was saying that it helps all of us on all sides to have small talk. Now, let me first say that I think one of the mistakes we make is I'm sitting in small talk for 30 minutes. Yeah. Now, if that's what we're saying, right? Like, sure. Okay. Let's advance the conversation. Yeah. But a part of that is being a good conversationalist. I'm not going to stay in something that's growing stale and for a long period of time. That just wouldn't be good. So, you know, small talk, one, it's how we detect if the other person's safe. So I don't know you like that. I never met you. So me just kind of like, oh, how's the weather? or like, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, your lawn is looking amazing. Okay. Yeah. I'm gauging, are you even safe? Are you open? Are you open to building rapport? Do you smile back? Right. So I'd rather do that with low stakes content before investing here. Okay. Because if you show that you're not safe, if you show that you're not interested, or if you show that you're not a good conversation partner, you're giving like one word answers, it wouldn't be enjoyable to continue.
Yeah.
I'm not going to keep this going. So I'm kind of gauging you. Okay. I'm also signaling to you that you can trust me because I'm building it with you. Now, I know sometimes people, you know, say like, hey, just jump into the deep stuff. Like, I love it, girl. Like, let's get deep. I understand it. I felt that way sometimes before too. Yeah. Like, hey, let's go there, girl. But I see my job as informing you of the potential social consequences. You do what you want. I'm letting you know with some people an unintended social consequence of me jumping into the deep things and you weren't ready or you don't want to go there is one, you're questioning my judgment. I don't even know her like that. Yes. She's like talking to me about this. And you could say, well, then screw those people. They're not my people. Sure. But to show you that I'm also mindful of like your comfort level, I'm starting with the soft stuff, stuff that's inconsequential to consider you. Now, then we can go into deeper stuff and whether that's in the same interaction or over time, like if you're a neighbor. So yeah, maybe the first couple of weeks I moved to a new city, I am talking about silly stuff like weather's amazing. Okay, you got to fill me in on this neighborhood. What do I need to know? Ha ha ha. Because it's like I'm creating a certain affection for myself in you. I want you to be like, she seems nice. She seems cool. That was warm. Before I'm asking about like, hey, I actually feel kind of nervous about this or like, hey, I'm struggling. You know, I'm actually a single mom and I just split up. And so I was wondering like any resources, you know, and then we can get there. But I just see it as like such a good way to develop safety and trust before we get to the deep stuff. And I think that it can also help us to have some longevity in relationship building because we took it at a certain pace. Now, most of the comments in that video were positive.
Yep.
Then you have people who say, hey, I'm not capable of small talk. And they offered a variety of reasons. I can't do that. Okay. I had some people say that's performative. And I refuse to do this little social dance of small talk. You know, I get that too. But you know what? You know what, darn it? You know what I'm going to say? Some of socializing is I am performing. Yeah. Like, and it doesn't make me a fake person, but some of it maybe it's the real me, but it's this version of me that is light because we don't know each other. Yeah. And so the whole, like, I need to be able to be myself everywhere. I'm being myself too, but I'm also adapting the self I show to be appropriate to the moment and the audience. And I don't know you like that. So it's surface level stuff to show you I'm safe and we're cool. It doesn't make me phony that I'm not having heavy philosophical conversations about heaven and hell and and war and peace. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make me fake. And honestly, your brain can't even handle every conversation being that kind of conversation.
That is so powerful. I think people who say they don't like small talk, I get the performativeness too. I think also some people don't know how to do it. I think it is also because we're like obsessed with the ending. We're like, I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait until I'm good friends with someone. I want to skip that part. I'm impatient and I want to just dive right in. And I think you make a really good point also about, you know, it is very like black and white to me of like, I will only talk to people that I love and I am like best friends with. Otherwise, everyone else is like dead to me to the point that I don't even want to acknowledge their humanity like you talked about. I also wonder too if it came from this wave during like the Boss Babe era of like the how are you really? Like remember when that was like the whole conversation on social media that was like – people ask you, how are you all the time? And you don't even tell them. You're inauthentic. Be brave. Tell them that you're doing terrible.
That's so true. That's so true. Oh, God.
So I think we've just overcorrected by being like, well, I'm going to tell everyone that I'm awful because I am.
You're right.
Yeah. People don't want to talk to you.
That's so good. You're so right. That pendulum swung all the way back over. That's a good point. Like, just be real. I'm going to be real. And if I can't just be real, then I'm
not. And everyone's obsessed with being authentic now, right? Like, everyone's like a real, even like social media, like, right? Like, we pivoted from sort of the perfection to now it's this curated, authentic perfection, essentially.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's so interesting too of – what really made a difference for me when you said that was I do think that I am someone who's like I don't love small talk. I want to cut to the chase a little bit because I don't love talking about the weather. And I think I've been in friendships where we had no depth and it just like was so boring and soul crushing to me. And I'm probably not as good as it, right? And then you kind of are bad at it. So then you avoid it and then you get worse at it and then you don't like it as much. But just, yeah, I mean, I feel like since having a child and strangely moving to Florida because people are much more friendly in Florida than in Philadelphia, people actually do acknowledge each other on the street for the most part in Philadelphia. I mean, I remember when I moved here, I was like, leave me alone. Why are you looking at me?
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, even like having a child, it is kind of this, or a dog is this good kind of icebreaker where you have something to talk about that isn't directly related to you. And it does make my day better when I see someone on the street and they like say that my dog is cute or my daughter is cute, or I drop my daughter off at daycare and I like talk to the front desk person a little bit. And I really think because we don't do it, we don't have those positive experiences of it. And then we don't believe that it will actually help our mood.
That's so true. And, you know, something else that might help a person who's kind of reluctant is like, I like what you were saying about skipping, like being obsessed about skipping to the end and getting to the end. Because like, okay, so if you, we've all seen kind of that image of like a circle with a lot of other circles around it, like of a tree, right? Or maybe specifically in the context of friendship, like you have your 3 to 5 friends in the middle and then like maybe this, these outer rings of people. And the research shows that there's benefits to having loose ties. So these are people who we're not necessarily close with, but like you see them sometimes, they see you, you kind of know them by like their first name and like it's cool. But there's all this research around how helpful it is to have those people in your life too. So we need that texture in our friendship landscape and that they all add something special. So like my people in that center circle, I need to be intimately known. I need to have people who I show up for. I'm willing to be majorly inconvenienced because you're my girl. Like I need that kind of deep relationship, right? But I also need people who all they expect of me is something light. Like I can't be that girl for everybody. So I need people who I'm just kind of like the girl who says some jokes at the gym and it's like, it's funny. Or mom friends. And like, these are the women who are sharing resources with me. Like, oh, I didn't know that that program was available or that breastfeeding group. Or, I didn't know. Right. And you're the only person in my world who would know that information because the girls in my main circle wouldn't. And so I think if we even just saw, and I know this sounds very like life coachy, but like the abundance that's available on your friendship landscape, I wonder if we'd be more open and could take just like a breath and relax. And so me like chatting to this girl as I'm walking around the neighborhood, my goal is not necessarily to make her my bestie or to write her off. If I can tell right away that we wouldn't click, then like, what am I doing? Like, we're just chatting because I don't know. She's going to give me some, she's about to share with me like, oh, did you hear about, you know, the crime that happened last night? Yeah. Wait, what? Yeah. Somebody was going around like checking door locks yesterday. I didn't know. Like I wouldn't know unless I'm engaging with people, resources or needs. And then also, and I don't mean to get super spiritual, but like, I'm also going to say just like, I've been thinking a lot lately about how this conversation around friendship and loneliness, we're like looking for something and there's not enough conversation around like what you have to give, like whatever your gifts are you, do you even really have them if they're not shared? And I know how that sounds like very woo woo, but like, you know, like maybe my gift is to like make a person laugh or to teach things or to sing or whatever. But like, does it matter if I can sing if people aren't around to enjoy it? Does it matter that I'm funny if people are not around like to laugh? Does it does it matter? And so like sometimes the interactions are for me to operate in my gift. It's not just about like, if she can't give me deep conversation, then I don't want it. I don't want to perform. Yeah. I mean, gosh, darn, like maybe it's just like, I have a gift of laughter and this girl needed a lightened spirit, or I'm an encourager. I have a gift with words and this person needed somebody to speak life into them. They say they're kind of down and I tell them something about like, well, girl, it's going to get better. Come on now. You know, and she needed that. And I have a gift for that. And so sometimes it's just, it's what I've got to give to others today too. And I know that's not as sexy and not as viral, but like there's things in you that need to be affirmed and they're affirmed when you use them. And so if you can give people good advice, or be a listener for that girl who does pop off and overshare. And so today my role was to listen and be like, girl, I hear you. You know, you got this. And it just it was a light thing, but that's what I'm good at, you know? And so that's just something to consider too, is like gifts. And these are being opportunities to affirm and activate who I am, which I think could go to your point of like having positive experiences so I keep doing it. Yeah. And so maybe I need that affirmed in me because it develops the gift. It helps to confirm that this is who I am. I feel better about myself being helpful. And it gives me an opportunity to confirm the thing I think about myself. I'm a giver and I'm generous and I'm funny. And this was a moment to confirm that for me too. And so there's just so much that could be missed by not connecting with other human beings. Especially with relational goals of making friends, but I'm overlooking all these moments of connections because I'm waiting for my besties. You know, it happens little bits at a time and it's all around, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Well, I think too, you know, hilariously, I went on Bumble BFF when I first moved here.
How was that?
And it was good. I only went on like actually one friendship date, I guess I'll call it. And what's so interesting about it, Danielle, and this is what really connected to me with what you were talking about with like small talk and going slowly. And I used to do this with dating too, of like wanting to jump right in and I would scare people.
I need to know. Yes.
And what's fascinating about it is this girl that I hung out with, is she knew I was a therapist based on my profile. And she took this as this like incredible opportunity of like, we're going to go super deep, super fast. And I was like happy about that because I was like, great. I love it too. And we like had these incredibly deep conversations. And it was like, I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but like when you are in this intense like 2-day false love affair and then you like leave and you're like, oh my God, what was this? I don't even know this person in any other context.
Yeah, that's funny.
And that was kind of how this was of like we had this like 3-hour like coffee date. We like left being like, oh my God, you know, we're so connected, meant to be, blah, blah, blah. And then we left and we like texted a little bit and then we stopped talking because I think we both were like, this is weird. I've never seen you in any other context. I don't actually know you. We just like created this vortex without any other elements. And I think that's important to remember too, is like, again, there wasn't any trust built. It was just the depth that was created and the importance of going more slow and steady. And that doesn't mean that you're being fake. It means you're building trust.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting because I wonder if a lot of people listening can relate to that. Like I definitely have my history of having some fast friendships where it was like, oh my gosh, you love her too. You did this.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. But even though, like, I think it speaks to chemistry. And I think there's a difference between like chemistry, closeness, and intimacy. And chemistry is something I can experience without any knowledge of you. It's just we have a rhythm and the way that we show up, it works. The rhythm is just quick. I need no knowledge of you, right?
Yeah.
I think closeness starts to involve knowledge. I feel close to you because I know who you are. And then intimacy is like the whole other level, right? Like even if we disagree, even if I'm not feeling emotionally close to you in this season, I'm thinking about marriage, right? But we have a certain intimacy where I am totally myself. I'm not thinking twice. I'm not trying to change who you are to make sure you're good enough to be here. We're just both here and we're accepted as we are. And so it is tricky because that chemistry can kind of cloud our thinking. And not to say it's not real or these aren't real moments of connection, but translating it to a friendship. Now, I don't know how this girl is reliable. I don't know how she is when like she's in conflict. I don't know what she's like. I don't have any knowledge of her. And I'm trying to translate this feeling I had during our chemistry into the unsexy parts of friendship where I'm showing up for you. And I told you I would follow up and I have to remember details about that medical thing that you had. So I'm supposed to be like, how was the doctor? You know? And so that's very interesting. And I've definitely had the same experience you've had. And I think you're right. One of the benefits of progressing in a gradual way is that we're learning about each other's character. We're doing small bits of trust. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to feel more sustainable over time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it. Love it. Well, this was such an incredible conversation, Danielle. Is there anything that you feel like we should end with or something that we didn't touch on that you're like, I want to make sure I say this?
I just want people feeling encouraged. I really do. I know it's very easy to get nervous and cynical. Mm-hmm. Do people even care about friendship these days? And people don't follow through. And I just, it's so easy to get cynical. And I just want to encourage the person who's listening, who's starting to just feel over it, the friendship mm-hmm. thing. But there's just so much benefit of being a connector, being out in the world, sharing your gifts, you know, meeting new people. It can be a really beautiful thing. And I think if you are intentional about positioning yourself to enjoy some of it, mm-hmm. as opposed to withdrawing because of the times it didn't go well, I think you'd be really surprised by how good it can get. So I think I would just end by just encouraging people to start to intentionally position themselves to enjoy how satisfying connecting with people can be.
Love that. Will you tell us more where to find you if you're accepting new clients, if people connected to you? Or I know you have an institute now. Can you tell people about that?
Okay. Thank you for that layup, for throwing that over. Yeah. So, you know, all the information on me lives at betterfemalefriendships.com. But recently, you know, we're seeing people get into the connection space, and I'm so glad for it. People are becoming connection-specific therapists and connection coaches, mm-hmm. and there's books on it. I think that's terrific. But a lot of people I notice have a gift for being good listeners, and they have a passion for friendship, and they want to help, but they don't really have technical skill or training.
Yep.
And so we developed the Women's Relational Health Institute to help women who are interested in women's friendship. And we will teach you how to coach women through 5 of the most common relational issues that women have. And we go through the framework and the domains of relational health. And we teach you the technical knowledge and then how to coach women through it. Because I do want us talking about connection, but I want more women doing it in a responsible and skilled way. And so we got you. So all that lives at womensrelationalhealthinstitute.com. But I'm just so glad and I'm rejoicing for all the women who are getting really serious about friendship in the same way we were about parenting and being bosses in the boardroom and getting married. There are more and more women who are taking mm-hmm. this very seriously, and we're interrogating messages we downloaded about the role that friendship's supposed to play. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad to hear some of these conversations, and I'm so thankful to you for bringing me on to lend my voice.
My gosh, of course, Danielle. Everyone needs to go follow Danielle on TikTok. Are you still on Patreon too?
I am. Yeah, all the things. And all that lives at betterfemalefriendships.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Danielle. This was incredible.
Thank you for having me.